listening to Black Entrepreneur Radio.
Radio.
The show that celebrates black entrepreneurship worldwide. Exclusively on Bashani Radio app. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store. Wakanda forever, baby.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Black Entrepreneur Radio, where we celebrate black entrepreneurship worldwide. We thank you for joining us, powered by Bashani Radio app. To learn more and how to be a guest on this show, just simply go to blackentrepreneurradio.com. All right? It's another wonderful day in the neighborhood. And we got a powerful and extraordinary entrepreneur. His name is Herbert Harris, right? And he has this powerful book. It's called Solving the Race Issues in America. It gives powerful and concise overview of America's legacy of racism. The book provides key information and fresh perspective needed to begin the process of solving racism in this country. It starts with a poignant look at current political and state of this country. It then reveals historical and current truths about racism in America. Every chapter presents the reader with insight that keeps him hooked until the end. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you Dr. Herbert Harris, the author of Solving the Race Issues in America.
Wow.
Dr. Herbert, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, Benny, let me tell you, I am doing great today, man. And I just want to say thank you for having me on the program. And I want to congratulate you. And I'm going to call you a young entrepreneur because I'm older than you are.
No problem. I'll take that.
But as a young entrepreneur who really followed his dream, and I have watched you develop Bashani Radio. I've been a part of it with our program. But I have seen you as a person that's always had a vision. And anytime you talk about entrepreneurship, you got to have a vision. If you got no vision, it's not going to happen.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you, brother. So let's get right into this amazing book. One, it's on time. It's right on time. Solving the Race Issue in America. Is it my understanding that you got some solutions for this problem we have and we've been having for over 400 years?
Absolutely, Benny. You know, in the book, we do three things. One, we point out the history, and not to indict people, not to, get people upset, but we give an overview of the history so that folks can understand where we came from. It's very difficult to go forward if you don't know where you came from. You know, when you have a GPS and you put in where you want to go, it also has to know where you're at.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's start from the beginning.
Yes,
all right?
Sir.
And that will be somewhere around slavery time. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What has happened in the mindset of African Americans since the days of slavery that honestly, if you look real closely, Dr. Harris, a lot of people are still suffering from those moments and times with the way we deal with each other. What is your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Benny, you learn to be a slave. You know, when the Africans were brought here from Africa, there was an extensive process. And, you know, we've all talked about the Willie Lynch letter, but it was, and the Willie Lynch letter is really how to make a slave. Willie Lynch also wrote a more comprehensive treatise called, you know, The Making of a Slave. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing here is that behaviors were instilled among the slaves, behaviors such as distrust for each other, you know, behaviors such as being fearful for your life, learning how to suppress your dreams, your goals to somebody else's.
So I want to stop you right here, Mr. Harris. Let's talk about the behavior aspect. And you said something very, very powerful. The distrust we have for each other. Break that down a little bit and explain to me, why does it still exist in 2020?
Well, you know, Benny, the idea of in the Willie Lynch letter, he said something very powerful. He said that always create divisions between the young slaves and the old slaves, between the light-skinned slaves and the dark-skinned slaves, between the male and the female. Always create divisions, because whenever you have people divided, then it's very difficult for them to trust each other. And so that was always the way. You know, we had the field Negroes and the house Negroes, and there was distrust between the two. I mean, deep distrust. In the Willie Lynch letter, he says that you have to take a slave's mind and control his mind to the extent that the master can sleep at night and not worry about being killed.
Wow. That is, oh my goodness. You just, Dr. Harris, I'm going to tell you, you just hurt my heart with that, because that is scary, but yet so true. Because we still live in that mentality right now where, you know, that is deep, man. I don't even know where to go from there, because you just dropped the bomb that I don't think most people manifest on a regular about the mentality of the mindset. Let's talk a little bit about this mindset and why it affects the young youth today, because I'm starting to see even some of the younger people really not even having a respect for life, like, you know, coming upon each other, you know, in such hard ways that, you know, you remember back in our days, Herb, you're a little older than me. Well, you know, we'll knuckle up. At least I remember it would be like, oh, you got a problem with me? Let's knuckle up. You know what I mean? Yeah. We'll knuckle up, and then whoever wins or whatever, you give your pound and y'all go home, and then y'all friends for the rest of your childhood. That don't seem to be the case right now. Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, we have created such a gun culture. Let me back up for a minute. You mentioned something very powerful. When we talk about the distrust among black people.
Right.
In black businesses, if we progress that concept up until today. Now, you're in New York City. And if you go into Brooklyn, you can find more black businesses on Flatbush Avenue in New York City, in Brooklyn, than you can find in all of Harlem.
Wow. Yep. And that's a fact.
And that's a fact. Even when I was in New York and I practiced law, we were in a building 209 West 125th Street, and we had a whole bunch of black lawyers and black real estate businesses, et cetera. And on the door, you would see a bunch of names. But when you got behind the door, it was not a partnership. You see, you got to trust one another to be partners. It was not a partnership.
What was it?
It was five or six guys renting space.
Oh, wow.
The only thing they were sharing was the rent. But there was no constructive partnership concept, you know, that this is our goal, that we're going to work together, that you do your part and I'll do my part. Mm-hmm. And that's a carryover from the slavery experience. The slaves were taught to distrust each other so they could never come together. You never wanted slaves to get together.
Because when they become together, they may join together and they may move together, and then they become dangerous when it's more than one. Is that the concept?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that training, that psychology has not been neutralized. In other words, you know, James Brown said something very powerful. He said, I'm black and I'm proud. That probably did more for the, you might say, the elevation of black business than half the college degrees.
Mm.
because it touched people on an emotional level. It made you feel better.
Okay, Dr. Harry, I want you to back up though, because here's what I want to know. What is the solution for distrust amongst Black people? What is the solution?
The solution, we got to do three things. There's three steps to the principle for righting any wrong, for straightening people. We got to acknowledge that it's there. You know, that once we acknowledge it, say, you know what? We haven't been able to trust one another. You've never really given me a reason to distrust you, and I haven't given you a reason to distrust me. Why are we distrusting each other? And once we can face that, say, man, this must be some training from before. This must be some seed that was planted in our mind. So the first, acknowledge that it's a problem. To come down off our high horses, you know, sometimes, well, this one, the same distinctions between rich and poor, mm-hmm. educated, uneducated. So that's the first, acknowledge that these things are there, that we have a problem.
Absolutely.
The second is to recognize what has not worked. If we're having this conversation right now, and right now the country and the whole world is having the same conversation, then this means that all of the programs, all the laws, all the politicians, all the court decisions haven't really changed anything.
Not at all. I mean, here's what I could believe that's happening now in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter movement, and that white people are starting to, and other cultures are starting to recognize that there is really a serious problem. Things are beginning to move, but at what level are they moving forward versus what level is they moving back? Now, you would think after George Floyd incident, right, the murder of George Floyd, you would have thought, Dr. Harris, is that nobody else will be bold enough to even attempt to go at a African-American man with all the cameras around that. And that simply has not been the case, which, as we see, you know, based on the time we're doing this interview, you know, Mr. Blake, you know, yes, who was shot 7 times while entering the car. And I honestly, if you can go on YouTube and Google incidents of the police, I've seen white guys almost run the cop over and they never pull the trigger. You know what I mean? Where he's just going and open the door. You got 3 kids in the back seat, I think 3 or 2, his children. What in the world you think he's going to do that you needed to load him up with 7 bullets?
Bullets. Well, think about this, Benny. The young white guy that killed 2 people that night, before he killed those people, he was walking up to the police with the gun in his hands.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And they gave him water.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And the same police that felt so threatened by a black man's back that they had to shoot him.
Oh, you better preach. You better preach.
Yeah. And so, you know, the thank God, you know, there's a chapter in our book called Thank God for Television. And the reason that the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s worked was because when white people and black people saw what was being done to black people in the South, when they saw the dogs attacking people, when they saw fire hoses knocking kids down the street, when they saw people being beat by the billy clubs, I think most people are good people. White people and black people are good people. And when you see something so blatant, you say, man, this is wrong. This shouldn't be. And it was on that platform that the civil rights legislation of the 1950s, the 1960s, the Voter Rights Act in 1965, all of that was as a result of people seeing injustice and people of all colors coming together.
Very powerful. So it took a movement of all people, the same way we got President Barack Obama in office. He couldn't have did it with just only black people voting for him.
That's right.
It took a lot of other people to actually vote for him in order to make that happen. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So let me ask you something, Dr. Harris. Why did you write this book? Why?
Well, I wrote, you know, it's interesting, Benny. I actually wrote the first version of this book over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just before President Obama was elected was the first version of this book. And once he was elected, in my heart, I thought that the book was unnecessary. I really thought that,
you thought that simply because he got elected, it was not unnecessary. There was still a lot of stuff going on, Dr. Harris.
But I know, but you see, at the time, there was that desire to see right. And do you know that President Barack Obama in the 2008 election got more votes than any president has ever gotten? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that said, man, and that means white people, black people came together. And my thinking was that so many white people and black people came together to elect him, that surely we must have gotten past this issue of systemic racism. And what I realized was the moment he was elected, the next day, the opposition, primarily the Republican organization, started to undermine him.
Right. They went at him hard. They said things about him that if you was to say about other presidents, people would be like, you know, horrified.
That's
it. They did while he was in the office. They said things about him, which didn't
they did make, it, man.
You know what I mean?
I mean, every regard in every way. And that's when I saw that transpire, I was like, you know what? Maybe we haven't gotten over this racism thing, you know?
Yeah, you think?
And I'm going to tell you, man, when he was elected the second time, I have to say I was impressed again. I said, you know what? He got a second term. That means that maybe whatever I thought was happening was not really happening. Maybe, remember, the people, we're going to take our country back. You know, Benny, I was speaking out, I won't say what state, but I was out speaking in the West, and I was the only African-American speaker on the platform, and the guy ahead of me came out and he said, you know, that we're going to take our country back. And I mean, he went into a whole, at the end of his speech, he went into this political stance, and that's not normally what you do in a entrepreneurial setting.
Absolutely.
And so I came out, my comment was, I said, well, I want to thank him so very, very much, because I did not know that America had been invaded by a foreign country.
That's a good comeback. I like that. That's a good comeback.
Okay. Yeah. See, so once again, President Obama had served his two terms. Once President Trump was elected, I dusted the book off again. I'm like, let me look at this again. There's something else going on here. And over the next year, I began to revise it, and I began to see more, because the things that were going on now at first were more subtle. You know,
right.
People would say one thing and do another. Okay, but
they were quietly, as we would say, quietly be racist, but they wouldn't publicly do it.
We
seem to be at a place. It's like the young kid showed you. He walked down the street with the gun.
Yes.
Like it was nobody's business. I can do this. That's what I do.
But think about this, Benny. You remember the militia, the white guys went into the state capitol in Detroit? Remember mm-hmm. that?
Absolutely.
And one day, I mean, they were parading around with long guns and AK-47s. And I just thought back when the Panthers had tried the same thing. If it had been a group of black men, they would not have lived past the second step.
Oh, absolutely. Now, they wouldn't even got that close.
Nah. Uh-uh.
That wouldn't have happened. They would have not gotten that close.
That wouldn't have happened. And so this has been coming all along. But once with George Floyd, that was the first time, I think, that the world saw a man die right before their eyes.
Right. And it wasn't a movie. It wasn't a television show.
It was not a movie. And that's why there was such a world uprising. I mean, people were demonstrating in New Zealand, in places that folks, you know, they'd never even been to the United States. But because I think most human beings, white, black, red, brown, most human beings are good people.
Absolutely.
And when they saw that, they said, this has got to change. And that's why it all, they hold the demonstrations, et cetera. But that cancer of racism was still there. And at that point, like I said, most of us, when we saw that, we said, hey, this has got to be the tipping point. This has got to be it. This, I mean, nobody can see that who claims to be a God-fearing person and not say, hey, we got to straighten this out. But
it's like we're saying now, you know, you got to, you, how could you not see what just happened to, what's his name?
Mr. Blake.
Mr. Blake. And
yes.
Their theory now is, ooh, if you look closer, he had a knife in his hand and he was got that. You can't see if he had anything in his hand, first and foremost. Nah. Number two, I've seen there's so many places you can shoot a person who has a knife in his hand. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes.
There's so many places you could shoot him. 7 times in the back, you were trying to murder him.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
That's my opinion. You were trying to murder him.
Yeah. And so that's the kind of mentality that just as the Willie Lynch, the paradigm of slavery has inflicted and impacted black people, the paradigm of slave mastery has inflicted white people. Mm. And so these two paradigms are coexisting. And so when they saw George Floyd, the first thing was like, man, this is terrible. But that paradigm of slave mastery began to really kick in. And so you had the demonstrations, but then, oh, man, they're burning and they're looting. Oh. And so the paradigm of slave mastery never wants to look at the problem. The problem is systemic racism. And if you notice, I was listening to the Republican convention and Nikki Haley, everybody got up there on one accord. There's no systemic racism. There's no systematic racism. They're denying the problem, okay, which means you'll never solve it. That was a statement. And then number two, they are refocusing people's attention. So, you know, I have thousands of friends. My best friend is a white guy. And to this day, I have not had a single white person call me and say, hey, Herb, what's going on? You tell me. And I had to check one of my friends because he was talking about the burning and the looting. And I said, well, you know what? Wait a minute, man. I said, when he said there was no systemic racism and that was all in the press, all fake news.
Wow.
Okay. And so I looked
fake
at him.
Really?
Fake news. I said, well, look, let's look at this thing from two points. I said, number one, I don't think a white person can really speak on whether there is or is not systemic racism. He said, well, why not? I said, because the Indian proverb says, until you walk a mile in my moccasins, you can't really judge me.
Absolutely. Like,
wow. I said, so if you as a white man came to me and said, Herb, listen, these people out here at the country club, they are racist. They're doing me wrong. They serve me bad food. They won't let me come in the front door. They sell me balls that won't go in the holes. I mean, they treat me like an animal. If you came and told me about the country club, I would say, well, man, okay, you know, because I've known you 20 years, I'm not going to say, well, I don't think they're doing that at the country club, because I've never been to the country club. I'm not qualified to speak on how they treat you at the country club.
Absolutely.
So out of at least my respect for you, at least believe what I'm telling you. And Benny, it got so deep. You know, he looked at me because that paradigm of slave mastery had him. He couldn't answer. And I said, you've known me for 30 years. And if I tell you it is so, why won't you believe me?
And his response was?
He went back into, well, man, it's the looting, and I just can't get past the looting and whatnot. And I said, you know what?
So the looting is what was important to him.
Exactly. But it's a deflection. You know, if you had you love fine cars, can you imagine having a Rolls Royce and you're driving down the highway and the engine is leaking oil The brakes don't work. Mm-hmm. The transmission is slipping. And the only thing you see is the left tail light is out.
Okay. you don't see all those other 50 problems, right?
You don't see all the, and you're like, man, the tail light is out. We need to give him a ticket. He shouldn't be on the highway. This car. And that's really what's happening. People, this paradigm of slave mastery has white people as afflicted as the slave, the paradigm of slavery has black people afflicted. Because my best friend could not get out of that. He could not get beyond it. And wow. We didn't terminate our friendship, but I said, well, you
that,
know
that,
what?
That had to make you feel a little weird, though.
It did.
Like, I mean, I know you know, you probably gave him the benefit of the doubt, but that had to let you know, like, who have I been kind of hanging out with?
I've been sleeping in his house.
Whoa.
Me and my old lady have spent there. He used to tell me, he said, man, this wing of the house is called the Chateau Herbie.
Oh, my goodness.
Chateau Herbie. So this mindset has gotten black people trapped, so we can't get together as partners in business. We distrust one another. It's inflicting white people that they can't see the problem. They can only focus on the side issues that they can be thrown off. And none of us are, there's one very powerful spiritual principle, and it says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We all go to church, we all read the Bible, and it tells you right there, the first commandment, that honor the Lord thy God, you know. The second commandment, treat your neighbor as yourself. If that's all we operated on, we would have none of these problems. And so
that is very, very powerful, man. Mm. Wow. And I'm so glad that you shared that experience, your own experience, because a lot of times people want to speak on these things and they've had no experiences of what it is to feel like from somebody that you've known for a long time. And I'm not sure if that makes him a bad person or a good person, but I know ignorance in some way, whether we know or we don't know, we're still responsible for it.
Yes. Well, you know, Benny, we talked about the solution. The solution is, number one, as I said, to acknowledge it. And he and I have to come together and acknowledge the situation, to look at the history and say, well, read the book here. Look at the history. This is why I feel what I feel. You can document the history. So at least if we can acknowledge that there's an issue, that's step one. Okay.
Absolutely.
Step two is we have to realize what has not worked. And when I say that, we look at the courts. You know, one of the interesting things, I was listening to the Republican convention, mm-hmm. and one of Trump's accomplishments was that he has installed over 200 conservative judges. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the Congress blocked President Obama from doing for 8 years was appointing judges. There were almost 300 judgeships around the country, positions that were never filled, because they didn't want President Obama to fill them.
They didn't want a black man to do it. That's the way to say it.
There you go. And so you get conservative judges, the laws on the paper don't mean anything, because the law is always interpreted by a person. And if the person interpreting that law is a racist, then that law, even though it's on the books, is always going to be applied in a racist fashion.
Wow, that's very powerful. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Black Entrepreneur Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
To Black Entrepreneur Radio.
Radio.
The show that celebrates black entrepreneurship worldwide. Exclusively on Bashani Radio app. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store. Wakanda forever, baby.
Just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Black Entrepreneur Radio. Learn more about us at blackentrepreneurradio.com. We're speaking to Dr. Herbert Harris, the author of a powerful book, Race in America. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to pay attention to some of the solutions Dr. Harris talks about. And I want you to start to search inside. If you've listened to the first half, you heard the experience he had with his friend who is non-black. And one thing I think we got to realize, before we're any race, whether black, white, green, or yellow, we are a human race. And we have to ask ourselves, where did the human go? As I listened to Mr. Blake's sister, I think that was, she said that it was all about the human. And you know what? She's absolutely right. Because if you take the colors out, all you have is the race and the human. That's something we really, really need to think about. Because if we don't do something about this as a human race, we are going to have a problem that we've never seen before. Because, ladies and gentlemen, at some point in time, people get tired. They get tired. They get frustrated. And how frustrated can people continue to be? I want you to think about that, right? You're listening to Black Entrepreneur Radio. I'm Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. Let us return back to Dr. Harris. You know, Dr. Harris, if you just heard the little break there, I was talking about how, you know, people are getting tired, man, and you get frustrated, and it's like, you know, it just don't stop. Let me ask you something. I'm not sure if you touched this in there because we're in a different time inside the, you know, your book, but why is it only the white cops shooting black men? Why are the black cops not shooting black men?
I think there have been some cases where some black cops have.
Not as much, though.
But very rarely. And it's because the black cop, when he sees a black man,
he sees himself.
Like looking in the mirror.
There you go, brother.
And he knows, you know, when you talk, I have a lot of black friends that when I was researching the book, I talked to a number of ex-police officers. Mm-hmm. And they were sharing how they've had to navigate, you know, just because they had a badge and a gun, very often they were still inside a police organization that was racist. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. So they had to learn to navigate that. So it's a culture that is there that, you know, Benny, they did a study and out in California, I think University of Southern California, mm-hmm. and they analyzed just the voice recordings, the way that every interaction with a police officer and a traffic stop and an interaction with a person. And based on the tone of the officer's voice, they could tell in 75% of the time whether they were talking to a white person or a black person.
Just by the tone of the voice?
Just by the tone of their voice. And so that is why, you know, the black police officers, they have to walk a tight rope, brother, because they have to try to do the best they can at being a black person and the best they can being a police officer, too. You know? So it's, but at least they see the humanity in a black suspect or a black perpetrator. The white police officers, and we can't paint with a broad brush, because I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of good white police officers out there. You know, when I practiced law, so many times I would encounter situations where a police officer literally saved somebody, or a situation where this police officer stepped up. But other than that, though, like I said, there are those, and I don't believe it's a large number of policemen that do that, but there's a concept, you know, when we teach bullying, we used to do a study with bullying, and a lady wrote a nice book about bullying, and she said, when you have a bully situation, you have three entities, three people. You have the person who's doing the bullying. You have the perpetrator, okay? And then you have the person who's being bullied. You have the victim, okay? But then the third person, you have the bystander, the person who stands by and lets it happen. And I think that that's the position that many good police officers have been put in, that situation where they see stuff, okay? But there was a culture that they, what they called the blue line, okay? You didn't cross that blue line. And so even though you may have seen something that was wrong, you didn't speak up, because the culture said, if you speak up, you'll be ostracized. You may lose your job. And so we have that dynamic going. And so if we look at the world today, the country today, you have the police officers who are perpetrators. You have black men who are killed or victims. But we have a whole world that's standing by, either saying nothing or saying something. And that's what's going on right now. We have the Black Lives Matter people who are saying something. And we have a whole lot of white people who are saying nothing.
So let's talk to the power of the mindsets. Let's just for a second, if you could, I don't know, I've never been a white guy in my life, so I can't really speak to it, but I'm sure you have a very analytical way of that. Let's step on the other side of that coin. What do you think is happening in their mindset? Is it because maybe they were brought up to see black people as criminals, so automatically they have a fear for them, so that's the first thing they do is take out their gun?
I think you have a great point there. I think that's a lot of it, that black people have been portrayed in the media, you know, have the general image, like if you see a picture of a perpetrator, you can generally, they'll make sure to show the black perpetrator. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think inside there's an inherent fear in the white police officer, and maybe it's even a distrust. And so that's something that's going on. Then you have a very subtle mindset. A white fellow told me one time, and he's buying all kind of guns. And I said to him, man, why do you? I said, I'm not a gun person. What's the point? He said, let me tell you something, Herb. I said, what? He said, if I were a black person and white people had done to me what white people have done to you and your people, I would be mad as hell, and I'd be ready to go out and do something about it. That's why he said, so that's why we buy guns, because sooner or later, that's going to happen.
It's funny that you say that, because that goes back to my question I asked you earlier when I said, people get tired.
Yes.
And you can only push people so much before they start to push back. And
yes,
some of them, when they push back, unfortunately, they're not going to know when to stop. And you would have caused that by simply not having enough sympathy, empathy, and respect for another human. And I think we got to be very on point about calling people humans. You know what I mean? Because
yes,
no matter how you look at it, Dr. Herbert, no matter how you look at it, when we cut off the lights, we got the same problems. We got the same family issues. You know, we got the same things. You know, when you turn off the lights, the problems,
yes,
once you turn on the lights, that's when people can see, or so-called see again, and they only see what they've been taught to see.
That's right. And it's all, you know, you look at little kids in nursery school, the little black kids and the little white kids all hug and kiss and play together. But by the time they hit middle school, it's all changed. Yeah. And let me share something that used to happen in the South. Now, I grew up in the South, and I remember on the corner, a white guy owned a store, grocery store. And when we were kids, the little white boys, the little black boys, the little white girls, the little black girls, we all played together in the yard. But once we hit about seven, when we went to school, that's when we separated. All of a sudden, the white kids went to the white school, the black kids went to the black school. And the same kids that you played with now, you talk to them later on, by the time you're eight or nine, they're calling you the N-word. You say, what happened?
Because they have learned something new, huh?
They have learned something new. And so many of our police officers have learned that negative impression, that negative stereotype, and they respond to it accordingly. And as you said, until everyone can see each other as a member of the human race and give that respect and dignity just because you're a human being, not because you're white, not because you're black, but because you're a human being, until that day, it's going to be a challenge.
Dr. Herrett, I'm going to ask you something, and every time I ask, it's a little controversial, so I just want to hear what your thoughts on it. And that is, and this is just my opinion, I'm just going to say it. Why is it that out of all of those incidents, none of the black people who have been shot? Now, I'm just a question, ladies and gentlemen, so please, this is not the opinions of Bashani Radio, Black Entrepreneur Radio. Our advertisers are our sponsors. So it's just me asking a question. Why haven't none of the black men who have been shot had on a three-piece suit?
Why haven't they had on a three-piece suit?
Yeah. Meaning, like, the reason why I'm asking that is in those situations, it was Les Brown who said, the way that you dress is the way you will be addressed. So I'm just acting. You don't call my name three times, so I'm going to let you talk.
No, you have hit the nail on the head. You know, you and I both, we've traveled together, and you know, we always travel suited and booted.
Absolutely.
People say, man, why do you look so, why don't you wear a jogging suit? Because people address you the way that you dressed. My old lady and I were coming through Dallas, and the plane had a problem, and everybody had to get off the plane. We were the only black folks on, no, we weren't. There were some black folks on the plane too, but we were standing there. The pilot came over to me and my old lady. We were suited and booted. And he said, you know, I'm really sorry. You know, we had a problem with it, but we're going to get you all on another plane right away. I'm like, wow, interesting. But you know something, Benny? Whenever I travel suited and booted, most white people who communicate will come up and they'll say, you're a minister, aren't you?
Yeah, they do associate that. Yeah, I've been told that when I do come up, they call me one or two. They say either you're a pastor or you're a lawyer.
That's it.
That's what they tell me.
They never say you're a CEO.
Oh, absolutely not. No, okay. that doesn't pop into their mind. They think I own a church, or you know what I mean. I'm a lawyer, and I'm probably a criminal lawyer.
right. Yeah, you tell them I'm a corporate lawyer. They're gonna like, get out of here.
No. You trying to get some people out of jail? Yeah,
you know what? You know what, Benny? That is when we were talking about the mindset. That's a part of this mindset that's infecting our country, because I have never in really 40, 50 years of flying in airplanes, at least. I have never had a white person come up to me and say, you look like a businessman. You look like a CEO. So the mindset of a black man, even a black man in a suit and a tie, the stereotype says you got to be a minister, or as you say, a criminal or a civil rights lawyer.
That's absolutely. Yeah.
You look like a civil rights lawyer. And that's the problem with the mindset of our country, man. We see one another in these stereotypical frames, mm-hmm. and we have to get by that.
Wow. Because, and the reason why I asked that, because what I wanted you to answer to me is, and just hypothetical, mm-hmm. if you think some of these incidents, and I'm not trying to tell people they got to go get put on a suit. That's not what mm-hmm. I'm trying to say. I'm just, it's a question that bothers me quite often. You know, if they were in a three-piece suit or whatever, do you think it would have been the same interaction?
I think in many instances it would be different, you know, because it's like, once again, it's a different mindset. But also, you know, a lady named Carol Taylor once wrote a little book, and it was like how to be arrested or how to interact with policemen. And I noticed a lot of the young people, I worked with a group that we worked with young folks who had been adjudicated. And I looked at some of their interactions with the police officers, mm-hmm. and they were very crude. You know, when my mother taught me, and see, and it may be, this is maybe the problem, that in the segregated South that I grew up in, my mother taught me what she thought I needed to know to keep from getting killed. Okay, let's put it frank. This is what you need to know to keep from getting killed. And it was how to interact with people in authority. Okay? Mm-hmm. I was watching Boys in the Hood. You remember that movie?
Yep, absolutely.
And I was watching how the young men interacted with the cops in that movie. Okay? Now, as a young black man, if my mother had not given me that lecture, and all I had as a frame of reference was that movie, then I might act a different kind of way when I'm interacting with a cop. Mm-hmm. So for me, when a cop pulls me over, I'm suited and booted. And when the cop pulls up and I know I ain't making no funny moves, I'm not going to say, why you stop me? I'm going to look around and say, good afternoon, officer. Like, how can I help you?
Because you want to get out of there. Remember, you can only fight if you go home.
That's it. You have to choose your battles.
Absolutely. So you can't fight under it. All that other stuff, just not going to work. Now, in no way, ladies and gentlemen, am I insinuating because they dress like that is why that happened. That's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying that, as Les Brown said, the way that you dress is the way you will be addressed. And a lot of time, and that don't make it right, because people shouldn't be looking at the clothing that one wears, you know, to determine the character of the person. You see what I'm saying? But what I am saying is, a lot of times the way that we dress in general makes us act a different way, because, you know, when you suited and booted, right, Dr. Mm-hmm. Harris, you are not going to play basketball.
No.
When you're suited and booted, you're probably not going for a round of golf. When you're suited and booted, you're really not going to get some good barbecue.
Right.
You know, because it just ain't gonna work out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say all of that to say this, is that whatever your mindset set is at that particular point will determine what the energy of that interaction will be.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And one thing I know, and I've learned, and I'm teaching my son and daughter, you're not going to win when a person has a gun and the law on their side.
Exactly.
That's too much power.
That's too much power. And you know something, Benny, I think for our audience, I want to say that it's not right. You know, Dr. King said that a man should be related to by the content of their character, mm-hmm. rather than the color of their skin.
Okay? Absolutely.
But the mindset that has been created in America based on the racism and the racial disparities that started at the very beginning in the Declaration of Independence, that as a result of that, that mindset is a reality and you have to deal with it. It's not right. We're not telling you it ain't right. And we both know that a white kid can come on with flip-flops and a jogging suit and talk more stuff to a cop than the law allows.
Absolutely.
If a black kid did the exact same thing, the only difference was the color of his skin, the outcome would in most instances be different. And so it's not right. It's not right. But reality is about dealing with what you have to deal with to be around to deal with what you must deal with and to make the changes that are necessary.
Let me tell you something, Dr. Harris. This interview is extremely important. It's extremely necessary. What are the solutions, sir? If I ask you for three solutions to change today, how do we make these rush to judgment on African Americans stop? How do we make them stop pulling the trigger? That's one of, I think, the billion dollar question. How do we make them stop pulling the trigger?
Well, the first thing is that they pulled the trigger because until recently there was no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably get more trouble shooting a dog if you didn't shoot a person.
Absolutely.
Black man.
Absolutely.
And so the first is there's got to be consequences. And that is why, that is really the reason for all the protests, that when something as grievous as what happened to George Floyd happens, why should it take you so long to indict the people, to arrest the people? And so that's number one, that there can be, and that everybody know it, that now as a police officer, you're accountable for your actions. Not saying you're a good or bad person, but when you act, you need to be sure that you're accountable just as everybody else. Just because you're a police officer, you're not above the law.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we need to start working on changing the mindset. A lot of people are operating out of ignorance, and I'm not saying uneducated. I'm saying that they just don't know the right way. They just don't know, or they've chosen not to know. And so within all of the law enforcement, and not just the police, the entire judicial system is a place to start. You know, the same thing in the courts. This is the cops who have your negative outcomes are generally just, they're revealed quicker because when you shoot somebody, that's it. But in the court system, there's also a whole disparity there. And so to really bring in, if we're talking about what we need to acknowledge that there's a problem. That's like I said, the three part, to acknowledge there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then to bring in psychologists, to bring in people who now can help change that mindset. So consequences, change the mindset. And then the third is to really recognize that it's a spiritual issue, that it's a humanity issue, that we should not have to teach you how to treat another human being. The good Lord told you how to do that. Okay. And so to get people back to the spiritual foundation that we are here for a purpose, that God doesn't create junk, that every entity that's created, whether it's a rock or it's a dog or it's a person, is created in the image of God in that on that plane. Okay. And for the purposes that God put them here for. And so as a result, we should be respectful of that as human beings and give each other that type of respect. And that spirituality requires three things. One, to acknowledge. Two, to ask forgiveness. If you don't ask forgiveness for your issues, then you have not created a spiritual foundation to resolve them. In other words, if I have wronged you, Even if I did not know that I had wronged you because of my lack of understanding, then to make it right, I should at least say, Benny, I wronged you. I didn't know I was wronging you, man. I thought you wanted to be hit in the head. Okay, I was taught that you.
I thought you wanted to be hit in the head. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I was taught that. They told me every time you see Benny, hit him in the head. But you told me that's wrong. It hurts, and so please forgive me. for hitting you in the head, and also forgive all my friends, man. They don't know any better than I know. So acknowledgement, forgiveness, and then atonement. And I'm not talking reparations. And you know, people get all scared, you know, you're going to give me my money. No, it ain't a money issue. You're not in the dollars and cents. Like, atonement means, what do I have to do to make it right? Do I have to put more money into education? The whole idea of affirmative action back in the 60s was that the government recognized that racism had created disparities, and they legislated affirmative action programs to help give Black people a chance to catch up and get back into the American mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Benny, there's a saying that a mind changed against its will is of the same opinion still. And so if you bring in, like, say, when the school integration, I know in my town, the Supreme Court decision came down in 1956, they were still not segregated. They were suing in 1965. And by 1968, they finally, you know, the court demanded that they integrate the schools. But guess what? The same people who had fought the integration were still in charge. So did the Supreme Court change their mindset? Did it change their hearts? It didn't. And so from that moment on, they start undermining the operation of the Supreme Court. So we end up with a school system that doesn't really serve most Black folks. Many Black men are stigmatized. They build prisons based on the number of Black men in the third grade.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. They can extrapolate that thing out and predict how many they're going to need down the line.
Wow. So, this has been an amazing conversation. And for all of you out there, I mean, I'm going to put Dr. Herbert on the spot right now. First of all, I'm going to let him give his final words. First of all, I'm going to let you do that right there. That way, if you want to run with what I'm going to say afterwards, you can. All right.
All right.
Well, so what are your final words, Dr. Harris?
Well, my final word, one, Benny, I thank you so much for having me on. Our book, Solving the Race Issue in America, is available on Amazon and in the Kindle form, the paperback form. We have a website, www.solvingtheraceissue.com. That's www.solvingtheraceissue.com. And my closing remarks are this, that I attended the March on Washington in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we were fighting for voting rights, jobs, justice. And here we are now, 57 years later, and we are still fighting for voting rights, jobs, and justice. Mm. And so my final word is that all of us must acknowledge the problem. We, not to negate the progress, we've made a lot of progress. In 1956, we didn't have any Black mayors, any major towns. We didn't have any Black DAs. We didn't have any Black people in the state legislature. Had a handful of Black folks in Congress. All that has changed. We have a lot of Black people now who've achieved political success. But so don't negate what has happened, but let us recognize that the founding fathers said to make this a more perfect union. And the implication is that the union ain't perfect. We have to constantly work at it. We have to acknowledge the problems, ask forgiveness, and then make atonement. And it's only when we do those three spiritual steps that we will help America truly become the country it's destined to be.
Very, very powerful, ladies and gentlemen. This has been an extraordinary interview, and this is what I love. I absolutely love about Black Entrepreneur Radio is that we give the chance to highlight people who have powerful products and services. And I think it's important to realize that there's a lot more going on than that meets the eye. All right? A lot more going on that meets the eye. So here's what I'm going to challenge you. I like, here at Black Entrepreneur Radio, we like to give something to the listeners, right? So I want to know, I'm going to ask you for 4 copies of your book to give away to our listeners.
Absolutely, and I'm going to send 6.
Right, and in return, now this is how it's got to work, ladies and gentlemen. This is how it's got to work. I want you to go and to Dr. Your Instagram is Dr. Success Man, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, so Dr. Success Man, Dr. Success Man, that's his Instagram. You're going to have to go there. You know, when you hear this show, you're only going to be able to do it after you don't listen to the show, because that's why I put it at the end. All right. I'm going to pick 4 people from his Instagram. All right. You have to go and like his page. All right. We already know how many people he got right now. Right now, he got about like 10,900. That's what he got. All right. So unless that number goes higher, ain't nobody getting nothing. Okay.
I like that.
Unless that go higher. So I'm not picking anybody under 10,900 because he already got them. All right. So you're going to have to like his page, and that's all you have to do. And to make it fair, I'm going to go to his followers and pick the person, people who win. That's it. It is just that simple. We don't want him to pick, because then y'all may think it's hooked up, it's rigged, or, you know, he picked his homies. No, he's not going to pick anybody. But I know what, that number need to go past 10,900, because if it don't, I'm going to keep the books. Now what? Okay. So after you hear this episode, I want you to go to his Instagram at Dr. Success Man. All right. It's very simple. You're going to see his beautiful face there with a tie, suited and booted. You're going to have to like his Instagram. And I will pick 4 people. And I will DM you and reach out to you. And make sure you get a copy of this powerful book. If people want to learn more about you, Dr. Harris, how can they do that?
You're herbertharris.com.
And if they want to purchase a copy of the book?
They can go to the best place is get it right on Amazon. Amazon has the Kindle version and the paperback. And you can also get it through our website, solvingtheraceissue.com.
Okay. Remember, only 4 people gonna win. Okay, so the rest of y'all gonna have to buy it. So, and I'm gonna pick the people, and I'm already looking. I'm actually, here's what I'm doing right now, because by the time you hear this show, we'll be able to get. I'm gonna screenshot his Instagram. That's what I'm doing right at this moment, so I can know how many people was on there before we actually put this out and release it. All right. So if you don't go past 10,900, ain't nobody getting the book. Y'all going to have to go buy it. That's just how it's going to go down, right? You heard it right here on Black Entrepreneur Radio, okay? It's not a game. It's a lifestyle. I keep telling you guys this, all right? Dr. Herbert Harris, your final words.
Hey, Benny, hey, man, once again, thank you so much for this opportunity. And we got to do another show, too, because Black entrepreneurs, this whole civil rights movement has been fueled by Black entrepreneurs, from the hair products people, Madam C.J. Walker, through the Johnson products, to right now, people on the internet, right now, Black folks doing things on the internet that others need to know about. So we'll plan another show to focus on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, another powerful episode of Black Entrepreneur Radio, powered by Bashani Radio app. You can download the app for absolutely free, or you can listen online at BashaniRadio.com. Or you want to be a guest on the show, go to BlackEntrepreneurRadio.com. And let's talk about getting you on here to talk about your product or your services. Remember, we're here to celebrate Black entrepreneurship worldwide and globally. Until next time, I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night.
Entrepreneur Radio.
Radio.
The show that celebrates Black entrepreneurship worldwide. Exclusively on Bashani Radio app. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store. Wakanda forever, baby.